भगवद्गीता चैप्टर 12 ओम वसुदेव सुतम देवम कंसचाणूरमर्दनम देवकी परमानंदम कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरुम। सो इन दिस 12th चैप्टर is one of the shortest chapters in the whole Bhagavad Gita. There are two chapters, 12th and 15th. 12th and 15th are both most wonderful chapters. Of these, 15th is the most beautiful, very sacred for sadhus. Any time there is a bhandara, feast, then they will chant the whole 15th chapter. So that serves two purposes. It's a beautiful chapter, and at the same time, you know, while serving 500 sadhus takes time. So 15th chapter covers, you know, that serving period. Yeah, otherwise, what will people do? The first fellow who got the food, he has to wait for another 15-20 minutes until, you know, everybody gets it. So this is a reminder. 12th chapter is specifically suitable for us. It is also called Bhakti Yoga. Not easy to become a Bhakta. Who is a Bhakta? The Lord Himself gives some definitions. And of this 12th chapter, in a way, has been commented upon by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th Skandha. It is also called Uddhava Gita, or the last message of Sri Krishna. So beautiful, it is worth reading that. Excepting some few philosophical teachings, it's a most enlightening, inspiring book, 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Krishna has given many teachings. Of these, three are most famous. Bhagavad Gita is universally famous. Anugita, a summarization of the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself in the Mahabharata, and in the 11th Skandha, a chapter of the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, Arjuna doubt like which is better. There the Lord was talking about karma bhakti for the discharge of one's own duties. So there bhakti is speaking, but not for the Lord directly, but for the karma one does. Here he is talking about bhakti. So Arjuna's doubt is, let us chant one by one and then we proceed. Arjuna vacha evam satata yuktahe bhakta stvam paryupasate एचाप्यक्षरमव्यक्तं तेषां के योगवित्तमाः। सो अर्जुन आस्क दोज डेवोटीज हू एवर स्टेडफास्ट डज वर्शिप दी एंड दोज आल्सो हू वर्शिप दी इम्पेरिशबल दी अनमैनिफेस्टेड व्हिच ऑफ देम आर बेटर वर्सड इन योगा। सो अगेन दिस द डाउट doesn't belong to Arjuna really. It belongs to any one of us. Why this doubt? Because you see, there is a human tendency to imitate others and to listen to others. If one somebody is progressing faster in a field, or not only fast in any field, you know, suppose somebody is earning more money. So what people do, what is that job which gives more money? IT. Now IT, everybody is going to it. Yeah, you know, because it gives money. Previously it was doctors, now doctors are also earning well. Now IT people are earning very, very well. In fact, they earn more than doctors when they get good jobs. So it is a kind of imitation. They do not take into consideration that one's aptitude is also very important. And there is also a danger there. You know, what is the danger in IT? In IT, you program everything. So you deal in a mechanical way, objective way. Objective means not philosophical or psychological, objective way. And everything is an object, everything that can be controlled, that can be programmed. In fact, is a dangerous progress is going on, where there is a tendency to program everything. One of the biggest controversial subjects is whether we should clone. It is nothing but this IT technology. So what is the danger? Moral question is that what are you trying to do? Because every knowledge has both aspects. It depends upon how we use it. So Hitler, if he is in control, you know what he wants? He wanted to do it, in fact, genetic engineering. He was doing in his own crude way. What was that crude way? Eliminate all non-Aryans. So what are you going trying, engineers trying to do here, biological engineers? So they want to make a perfect person. What they do not understand is, a person doesn't consist only the physiological body, his samskaras. Supposing a jiva enters into a body, the body is perfect, but his samskaras are not perfect. And what will, how is he going to use that body? A body is exactly engineered to suit our needs. This is our theory of law of karma. So this is a big question. Of course, nobody knows what is the negative side of this cloning. Everybody only knows, because sometimes several years must pass before the negative qualities must come. This idea has been so beautifully brought out by Aldous Huxley in his novel, you know. What was that, machine produced babies and all that? Brave New World. It's beautifully brought out. They rebel against it in the end, because everything becomes mechanical. So, science thinks it can eliminate all the negative things and only keep the positive things, not knowing if one negative thing is removed, 100 more negative things will crop up sooner or later. So one of the things which people do not understand now is that when physical suffering is somehow reduced, does suffering end? It is like old rheumatism, as Swami Vivekananda used to say. You know, somebody is suffering from rheumatic pain in the shoulders. So you drive it away, it goes to the back. You drive it away, it goes to the legs. You drive it away, it again comes back to the shoulders. Yeah, you know, so much mental suffering has increased nowadays. What is it due to? Psychologists isolate two important causes why so much mental suffering is there. This is what they call self-alienation and meaninglessness. Self-alienation means a person behaving not according to his nature, but according to the dictates of the society. The second is, life becomes meaningless. If we don't have meaning in our life, then we will be most miserable people in the world. For this, you don't need to be a psychologist. You know, if something, it doesn't produce happiness, it may give you everything else, excepting making a meaning. Meaning comes only when you are 100% devoted to something. You want to do it, you are interested in doing it, and that alone can give us meaning. So a person becomes a devotee by willy-nilly, then you see it doesn't give any meaning. So parents force, you know, go to Swami, bow down to him, and why don't you do prayer, these things. It is good, some discipline is good. But to force them to do is what is called meaningless. It has to come from within. So that is a big subject that is going on. Psychological masters, say master psychologists like Adler, like Carl Rogers, they are now, they have woven a new pathway into what is it that makes a human being a worthy human being, what gives meaning. So he has written a beautiful book on being a person. We are all persons, yes, biologically, but not in our essence. Anyway, that is a subject, how to become a real person. These people, many people are neglecting it. That is why there, this unhappiness expresses itself in so many ways. Many people become bad, it is found out, not because they are essentially bad, but because they are bored with their life. They turn to crime, they turn to violence, they go to, you know, clubs, drink, dance, prostitutes, everything, not because they really want to do it. Temporarily, somehow they want to cover up their unhappiness. This is the fact. So, everybody must know what is his real personality, what is best suited to him, and if he follows that, then he can get fulfillment, and that is the way for him to progress. The same thing applies here also. Most of us are emotional. And therefore, the question of a choice, whether I should follow, you know, Jnana Yoga, it doesn't arise. There are some people who are not emotional. For them, Jnana Yoga is best suited, provided they undergo certain disciplines. So, whatever path the Lord is praising, whether it is Karma Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga, or Dhyana Yoga, or Jnana Yoga, he is praising it to the sky. But whatever be the path that we follow, one point which I mentioned many times is important. What is the goal of any yoga? That is the last meaning. But the earlier meaning should, prior meaning should be, it is knowledge. Jnana Marga and Jnana Siddhi are two totally different things. Everything ends in Jnana. You are a devotee. You must first be a Jnani to become a devotee. Do you understand that? You know, you must know, to desire something, what is the first full condition? How can you desire something unless you know about it? So that knowledge should be of threefold. The knowledge should be, yes, such and such a thing exists. That is the first. Second is it desirable by me? Because everything that exists need not be desirable for that particular person. So, is it desirable for me? It may be desirable by somebody else. Means it might be suitable for somebody else. But is it suitable for me? That is where the problems come, you know. Some people fall in love with each other. They don't stop to consider that, is this person suitable to me? Otherwise, there will be clash from the very beginning. Many marriages, you know, first day itself, quarrels will start. Yeah, yesterday Nitya was coming and asking, I have some serious doubts about initiation. And I'm only joking. So he thought, started. So that is the second consideration. The third consideration, is it possible? It may be desirable by me. Is it possible for me? And if it is possible, until what stage? Otherwise, we think that person is doing so much puja and I should also do that much puja. Otherwise, I am inferior to that person. No. You are yourself, that person is that person. So you progress in your own way. So, these are the three things. First of all, we must know. Secondly, whether it is suitable for us. Thirdly, whether we have the capacity to have that one. Because what is the problem with having something? The problem is twofold. Acquisition is one problem, the least of the problems. The maintenance is the biggest problem. Yeah, you can take one. Anything, you know, you can buy some fashionable what is called phone. Now you have to spend months and months together. This is called learning curve. Many karus are there in this world. This is worst karu. Every time something new comes, you have to learn something new. If you are quite happy with your old one, you don't need to spend more energy. Now, the moment you buy something, you have to learn. So, first thing requirement is knowledge. Does God exist? Yes. Then, should I desire Him? If others may desire, should I desire Him? Because desiring means, am I qualified? Am I prepared to fulfill the conditions that is necessary? Marriage, why marriage breaks now? Everybody wants marriage, that is fine. But am I a responsible person? Am I prepared to undergo all the conditions of a marriage? And it is very difficult. We have to adjust so many things. We have so much patience. How much patience, you know? Yes, yesterday you have seen Aishik is going outside. He has to be taken outside. The poor father, do you think given a choice he will do that? Yeah, really. Infinite patience is necessary. Now what to do? He got it. There is no choice, go after it. So this is a big problem. But knowledge is necessary, right knowledge is necessary. Yes, God is desirable, but which path so that I can go to God? So that is where these doubts are not Arjuna's doubts. Through Arjuna, our doubts. Because sometimes society also promotes something because it is fashionable. So many Europeans and Westerners, you know, they follow Ramana Maharshi. What do these animals know anything about spiritual life? Literally they are animals. That's a good word. But I am using it because they think, oh, I am Brahman. If you are Punjabi Brahman, that is wonderful. Understand? Brahma, Brahman, 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 not Brahman, Brahman. You know how much they are deluded. Who is capable of saying that I am Brahman? His behavior, after he is talking about Brahman, he is listening about Brahman, he is reading about Brahman, but next second he is walking with two girlfriends and two shoulders and two hands on their two shoulders, and he says, I am Brahman. Is it not odd? How many people are there even in India? How many followers of Shankaracharya are there in India? Very few people. And how do they spend their time? Even the Shankaracharyas, do you know, 75% of their time is only spent in puja. Either Sharadamba or Shankara are giving lectures or taking classes. How much time they are able, capable of meditating, I am Brahman. Why did not Sri Ramakrishna preach the path of knowledge? He asks him, which form of God you like? He said, I like Nirakar. So why did he get? Because he was very close to Keshav Chandra Sen, Brahma Samaj. So Brahma Samaj people, they think they are Nirakar Brahma, Bhaktas, Nirakarins. That's why Thakur says, you know, even 5-6 years old Brahma boy also is meditating on Nirakara Brahma. How horrible, you know, in the name of religion. That's why Thakur came, he's out of his grace, to clarify these points for us. We are not capable of loving an ordinary object which is visible right in front of us. The conditions of love we are unable to fulfill. The most important condition of any love is complete acceptance. A husband has to accept the wife, and a wife has to accept the husband. Parents naturally accept their children. That is why their love is truly marvelous love. But grown-up people, you know, what they love is what they think is lovable. That's not love. You can't go like this, you know, if a beautiful curry is there. And I like this particular flavor. But if you want that particular flavor and want to separate from the curry, what proportionate of curry will be left over? Yeah, you know, pick, supposing, you know, machar jhol, first class machar jhol. Some people like some parts of the mach. Then what about the other fellows? Anyway, the point is acceptance. So, in this world, only those who are capable of loving what they see and interact with, such people alone are qualified to turn that love towards God. Yesterday I gave an illustration, you know, if you have a 5 watt bulb, whether you take it to the toilet, whether you take it to the shrine room, it won't give more light just because you have taken to the shrine room. If our love is 5 watt love, and you turn it towards God, and how much love will be towards God? So, this is a wonderful psychological fact we have to understand. That is why I am talking at some length. If you cannot accept somebody whom you claim to love fully, accept only partially, when you turn your attention towards God, the same phenomena will take place. That means you accept only certain parts of God. What is that certain parts of God? No, be clear in your thoughts. What do you mean by accepting love, God, only selective acceptance of God? What does it mean?
When he answers your prayers, always yes. Whatever you like, maybe you attribute those things to God.
What is meant is, when he gives us happiness, then we are ready to love him. When he gives us unhappiness, that part of love, God, is not at all acceptable. Right? This is the problem. So, I don't want to believe in God. Why? So, if there is a God, why is he not doing things like this? So, supposing, you know, there is a devotee and his son or somebody has been killed by a tiger. So, what does the devotee expect from God? My son should not be eaten by a, should not have been eaten by a tiger. But suppose the tiger is a devotee of God. What do you think? He eats complain against God. What is happy event for the tiger? Yeah. So, you see, this is the problem. If you love God, you have to accept, you should never question, you should accept joyfully whatever he gives. Yeah, whatever you receive from him, with gratefulness you should accept. Like that fellow, two fellows were walking in a forest. They were being chased by a angry bull. So, they couldn't escape, remember? So, one of them said, I see there is no way to escape, quick, can you say a prayer? So, the other fellow said, I never prayed to God. The only prayer I heard was when we were having dinner, our father used to say grace. Say something. Well, he said, Lord, thank you, we are very grateful for what we are about to receive. Prayer is good. No, we should be grateful for what we are about to receive or receiving. So that is why it is so difficult to really love God. Who will not love God if he behaves or reacts or answers our particular prayers? Everybody will love God. But only a saint can love God even if God's will is that the saint should be tortured and then killed. That is very hard for us to accept. So it is not easy to be a devotee. One must be qualified to be a devotee. And simply repeating God's name anybody can do. But certain behavioral changes must take place. Not only this is true with regard to religion or spiritual life, it is also true in any field of life. If you want to be householder, certain conditions must be fulfilled. That is what the scriptures are telling us. If you want to work in a particular office, certain conditions have got to be fulfilled. Is it not? So the Arjuna's question is, evam satata yuktaye bhaktyastvam paryupasate echapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga vittamah. So, those devotees who ever steadfast, those worship thee. And those also who worship the imperishable, the unmanifested. Which of them are better versed in yoga? The real translation is, who is superior? Now, why are you having headache in comparing who is superior, what is your business? You follow your path. This, where is the time for you to think of who is superior and who is inferior? And again, as I said yesterday, comparison can only be between similar things. You see, if a man is an engineer, another man is a literature professor, who is superior? That is a stupid question. Between two professors of the same subject, who is better, who is not better? But between dissimilar things, there cannot be any comparison. So this is a doubt which comes to us. So the Lord is also answering. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Maya Veshya Mano Ye Maham Nitya Yukta Upasate Shraddhaya Parayopeta Teme Yukta Tamamata. So the Blessed Lord said, those who, fixing their mind on me, worship me, ever steadfast and endowed with supreme Shraddha, they, in my opinion, are best versed in yoga. What is he telling? He did not say who is superior, who is inferior. If they are following 10 different paths or 100 different paths, whoever is following their particular path in the best possible way, he is a superior person. So, these conditions, you know, the mind should be on me. Mind that verse. Their mind should be on me. He did not say which me. If they are thinking about a personal God, that is also me. If they are thinking about impersonal God, who is that impersonal God? It is only he. There is nobody else. But this is the condition. First of all, their mind should be on me. Whether he is a jnani or a bhakta, karmi, doesn't matter. Secondly, ever steadfast. What is the meaning of steadfastness? Under any circumstances, whether a person is sick or healthy, rich or poor, or having food or not having food, or being honored or dishonored, or being under happy circumstances, unhappy circumstances, it doesn't matter. Why? Because it is in my hands. It is not in the hands of, I should not look for the Lord. If you fulfill certain conditions, then I will think of you. No. Whether you love me or not, that is immaterial. I love you. 50-50. You know that? Which one? No. Indira Gandhi visited a tribal area in India. So, she met the chief, who immediately fell in love with her. As soon as she departed, he printed wedding card, I am going to wed Indira Gandhi. So, everybody asked, did you talk with Indira Gandhi? He said, no, but on my part, I am ready. It's a good example, you know. So we can love God, whether He loves us or not, that is not our concern, because love itself is an object, is the goal. Swami Vivekananda says at the end of the Bhakti Yoga, you know, the last chapter, the triangle of love. Love is its own goal. See, just to develop our love is the target. So anything can be a target. When you are learning archery, anything can be a target. So the target is not the important thing. You are not fixing the target for the sake of, you know, becoming a great archer. You are fixing the target for the purpose of sharpening your archery skills. The object is not important. So God is an object, or anybody is an object. So what happens here? When a person, his goal is to become a loving person, it doesn't matter in which direction that love turns. You know, if there is a fragrant flower, its nature is to be fragrant. Whether a good man comes, wicked man comes, whether that flower is offered to God or it is offered to a prostitute, it doesn't really matter. It is its nature to give fragrance, and it cannot stop being itself. So, what is the object of the path of devotion? Not to love somebody, to develop, to become a loving person. Ourselves, we want to become a loving person. This is the truth. In any field of life, you go to gymnasium. You are not going to gymnasium because you love the dumbbells or the, you know, machinery. You go there for what purpose? To develop your own muscles. So you are not going there because of the love of the machinery. You love yourself, you want to become stronger. That is why you go there. So once you become strong, you don't need to go to the gymnasium. Then you can use that strength for any purpose. This is the purpose of yoga, means to become God oneself. The God which we fix as a target is only for practice purposes. Whether you follow Bhakti Yoga or Jnana Yoga, ultimately what do you become? God Himself. When you become God, there is no need for any other God. After all, how many gods are there? There can be only one God. Either you become Him or He becomes you. See the point? A jnani, what is his goal? His goal is not to attain Parabrahma or something. His goal is to become a jnani. He wants to know perfect, he wants to have perfect knowledge. When he attains perfect knowledge, what does he become? Call by whatever name. He is a jnani, he is Brahman, he is Atman, Paramatman, you call by whatever name you call. Now he has become that, he has become jnana. A bhakta becomes bhakti, personification of bhakti. If we keep in mind, then what happens? A loving person cannot help love. Loving. So it doesn't matter if he's a good person, bad person, happy event, unhappy event, he loves, because he cannot help loving himself. Loving is his nature. So what is the special thing in this nature? He is incapable of stopping loving. So why? Because he doesn't possess love. Love possesses him. Now, at our stage, we possess love, and that is why, you know, in a way it is in our control. That means what? You switch it off. Supposing you are thinking of God, and suddenly you hear some nice, you know, pakoda smell. And you stop loving God and start running, loving pakoda. It is in your control. But when love possesses us, then what happens? It doesn't take into consideration what you want to do. It will only take into consideration what it wants to do. So if it wants to do, to love what is called karaila, green karaila, not fried karaila, not yesterday's goju. That won't do. Anita's house we had nice goju. That kind of karaila everybody would love. No. Apni khelena. Apurva kareche. Andhra people do even better. And I think Tamilians also do. Stuffed, you know, inside. And jaggery they put. Anyway, next time when you go, ask mom. She will tell you. Very tasty. You know, you just feel like eating that one. Pick up and eat. Because bitterness becomes attractive when you mix it with other things. Many things. In Bengal, they put this neem karaila tarkari. It is so tasty, you don't want to eat anything else. Neem begun? Very tasty. With rice, very wonderful. Or shokta. Yeah, of course, it goes without saying. Yeah. You know, the point is, when love possesses us, there is nothing which obstructs it. You see, the point I am trying to drive you. When we want to love something, we can only love what we think is lovable. But in the nature of love, there is nothing that is unlovable because it is its nature. To give another example, light. You know, if there is, say, sunlight, this ordinary electric light, it is controllable. When you want light, you know, you put on this switch. When you don't want light, you put off this switch. You can control it. But suppose the sun says, I will control myself. Who is he going to control himself? Can he switch himself off? I don't like this country. I will switch myself off. He cannot help. That means he becomes samadarshi. There is no way he can discriminate. And that's what the Lord is telling. If you want to follow the path of bhakti is not something which leads you to God. I'm telling in a psychological language. God is only for practicing purposes, it is a target. So ultimately, what is the purpose? You transform yourself into an embodiment of love. Then, not only you can love God, you can love non-God. That means there is no object which is not lovable because that loving nature cannot be selective. That is the idea. So see what a wonderful thing. When a person turns into this kind of bhakta, then whatever he sees becomes God. Just as when a person practices archery, first he starts with a big target, then smaller target. Then you know what happens? Everything can be target. There is nothing which cannot be called a target in that person's eyes. Small, big, good, bad, anything, because he is a master. So, this is one point. Another point is, we use the word God. I want to love God. What exactly do you mean? By God means that which is happiness producing is God. Can you call something God which produces the opposite? You know, somebody loves you, then you go, this is my God. Somebody hates you, can you call that person as God? See what I mean? So here, what are you trying to do? You are trying to get rid of this slavery because certain things make me love those things. And it is very natural to love anything that is lovable. But when we take God as a target for our loving practice, then you know what happens? Everything becomes God. because everything is a perfect target and I cannot see anything which is not God. That is the goal. That is what Swami Vivekananda says. Love itself is the goal of love. A supreme love means that he becomes transformed into love. Then can there be anything which that such a bhakta cannot love? You know, in ordinary words, what do we say? He sees God in everything. What do you mean by that, seeing God in everything? Everything becomes dear, everything becomes lovable. There is no enemy, there is no friend. There is nothing in this world in which a lover cannot see God. Because he has put on the, what is called, he has become jaundiced. He developed this 100% jaundice disease called love. That is what we have to understand. But to attain to that state, we have to start loving things with which we are familiar and which we profess that we love. This is very important. So, what are those objects which we profess to love immediately? You know, husband and wife, and children and parents, friends. But selective love will not do. That is what is called complete surrender or complete acceptance. Surrender means what? You see? Surrender means I become you. This is called one way of saying is surrender. That means here is a wicked person. He is a wicked person only for those who do not surrender. But when a person surrenders, then he says, that is no more, because that is me. And nobody hates oneself. When I become that person, then I start loving that person as myself. So he is no more the other, he is me. The other word is acceptance. Acceptance means complete acceptance. Partially we always accept. You meet your boss and he has a smiling face, you accept it. After some time, he has a frowning face. Sometimes the best people are those, you know, there were in a town, there were three Chinese doctors. Chang Ching Chung. Mane padche padhecho bolo to. So there was a fellow who was suffering and he went to his friend who is neighbor and asked which among these three is best doctor. So he said Dr. Chung is undoubtedly the best doctor. You know, what makes you say that? He said, you know, I was not feeling well. I went to Dr. Chang. He gave me medicine and I developed influenza. So I went to Dr. Ching and he gave me medicine and it developed into pneumonia. Then I went to Dr. Chung. Fortunately, he was out of town. So I am alive today. The best doctor. So you know, selectively we love only those things which make for our happiness, for our convenience, etc. That's not acceptance. That is where problems come. So that is why God has created his householder's life or this worldly thing. If everything is so beautiful, everybody is loving everybody, then man will never grow. He will be a cockroach. You know why I say that? Cockroach was said to be a very successful creature because it never had evolved. Evolution took place only in those creatures which struggled and died. Next life they became evolved into higher species. The cockroach was so successful, it for millions of years, it still remains cockroach. But don't worry, Vedanta gives hope for you. one day or the other the cockroach also will evolve into higher species. This meaning, unless there is an obstacle, we will never grow. Can't we understand? This is a simple fact. If somebody is not there to criticize you, you are never going to become a more tolerant, more patient person at all. It's impossible. Rather, we become very impatient. That's what we have, our state now is. And because everything, you know, you lift the phone, it works well, electricity never goes off, trains, cars, everything, you know, more or less reliably they work. So, if something delays us, you know how impatient we become. Had we only been, you know, like bullock carts, we used to travel by bullock carts. When I was young, you know, in the villages, bullock carts. Just imagine what a joy it is, bullock carts. You are going on the way and suddenly you see one nice sweet corn growing there in somebody's field. You stop the bullock cart and look here and there, get one, sit down in the bullock cart, go on munching. What joy it was. Nowadays, you know, like that you just go. You don't see anything at all. How much we are missing. Everything has its good side and bad side is there. But the point is, in those days people were very patient. They were walking. They know they accepted that condition. We also would do the same thing when there is no other choice. But the moment we have a better thing, accustomed to that better thing, and for some reason had to revert back to the lower thing, we become very impatient. So the point I am trying to make is, if there were to be no obstacles in our life, we would be never be growing. We would be in the same blissfully ignorant state. That's why the Lord, out of His infinite mercy, has created all these obstacles. So the Lord is telling that these whoever follows His path to the best of his ability, that person is superior. But then He says, etvakshara manirdeshyam avyaktam paryupasate sarvatra gamachintyancha kutastham achalam dhruvam samniyam yendriya gramam sarvatra samabuddhayah te prapnuvanti mameva sarvabhuta hite ratah. But those also who worship the imperishable, the indefinable, the unmanifested, the omnipresent, the unthinkable, the unchangeable, the immovable, the eternal, having subdued all the senses, even-minded everywhere, engaged in the welfare of all beings, verily they also reach Myself only. So those who travel the path of devotion, they also reach Me only. Those who follow the path of Jnana Marga Vikal, they will also reach Me only. Then is there any difference? He's not talking, mind you, he's not talking about superiority or inferiority. He's talking about which is most easy or suitable for most of the people. That's what Thakur had said. Kalikale manush annagata pran. So he is telling, klesho adhikatarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukham dehavadbhiravapyate. Greater is their trouble whose minds are set on the unmanifested, for the goal of the unmanifested is very hard for the embodied to reach. So those who travel the path of the impersonal, unmanifest, it is very difficult. Why? Because our minds rarely can think of abstract concept. Concrete, yes, very much. Even concrete, how many of us are capable in? Just you keep Thakur's photo in front of you. Look at him for 5 minutes. Close your eyes and try to imagine what is in front of you. How many of us will succeed? And how much time the image says? because we haven't developed that capacity of memory. You know, our memory is very poor. And again, memory is like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the more you develop it. So, you know, how poor we are in memory, how dangerous our memories are. Psychologists have tested it so many times. You know, this stage, a fake incident. At 12 o'clock midday, and somebody comes and shoots some people and runs away. This action has taken place in front of the eyes of hundreds of people for more than 5 or 10 minutes. And then the fellow runs, it's all fake. After this, immediately police will come, round up all these so-called witnesses and ask, can you describe what dress this fellow who shot this fellow was having, and how much height he is, whether he is black or white, all these things. 100 different versions. You know, whether a black man shot or white man shot, is it so difficult? There are people, some people say he is a black man, some people say he is a white man. Not surprising at all. So they have to train these police people and prisoners. Their memory is like ours only. You know how they start it? So the first training starts, a tray full of objects, different objects, 10, 15 objects. They will be given a few seconds, look at it. So after that they close the tray. Now try to tell how many things are there. This is one way. The numbers, you know, car numbers, one car has done something and running away. The number has to be correctly noted down. So what is this? There are computer, things are there to develop this memory. First they flash a number, two numbers, come on, remember, very easy, 23, 67. Then they increase the next number, 523. Many times it's fine. Then they increase one more. There is, after four or five numbers, then you are confused. Just the flash. You should be able to take photographic memory of it. But it can be, mind can be trained to do that. So go on doing it until even 10, 15 numbers, they can clearly remember. Once the mind is trained to pay attention and to take those numbers, the next thing is, you know, any car, within a second it can turn like this and go away. By the time this fellow's people has already registered, immediately they note it down and say, many people are capable of doing that. So, by that way, they can help us. This is only I'm quoting as example of what we are capable of really. These potentialities exist within us, but we never train them, that is why they never come out. So we must have some kind of exercise, you know, when you are reading a scripture, hearing a talk, or hearing a song, we must have that kind of capacity to extract the essence. That helps us in every way. So if we don't do this, you may ask, what is the point? You know, suppose you undergo memory enhancement program, training. Then what is the good of it? Because you see a photograph of Thakur, close your eyes, and exactly you can reconstruct in your memory the image of Thakur. Is it not wonderful? Is that not what we are supposed to do? That is the first training. Then that must be a living image, not merely a dead picture, dead pixel. Know that? Monitors, the whole monitor is divided into pixels. Some, you know, computer monitor or what is one, if some pixels, whatever is there, text or whatever, that won't appear there. It is as though you have put something on your monitor like this. This is called dead pixels. So this memory development is very necessary. This is only the least bit of the memory development program. The real memory should be you know, last time I committed this mistake. I should not repeat this mistake. Where is the problem? Your intention is all right, but your memory is not all right. We commit the same mistake and regret. Why did not I remember this? Yeah. So it should come at the right time. This is what Thakur is telling, you know, in his own beautiful way. That a man gets married, maybe he has a small child, and the child is dead, and for 15 days the mother and father are grief stricken, but after 15 days they forget everything, and again they try to have another child. Like this, they undergo endless troubles. Or a man has gone to court against his neighbor, and he has been ruined by his lawyer. Courts do not ruin. It is the lawyers who, you know, these rogues lawyers, your lawyer and the opposite lawyer, and both are in league. They have their own clubs, and they fix a time when they should solve your case. Because if they solve your case in 2 days, their income is gone. Doctors also do the same thing. Suppose they cure you quickly, why will you go to them again? So they must get, steadfastly they must get income, you know, like that story, remember I told you last time. There was this old man who was a doctor, and he had built big practice and all that. And he wanted to retire. He had a son who also was a doctor. Remember? No. So one day came, the father decided to retire. So he brought out the keys, handed over to his son, "My son, from today onwards, and you take over the surgery." In UK they call them surgeries. "And you run." So the man went in the morning, came back in the evening in great excitement. "Daddy, daddy, you know, that old woman whom you have been treating for 50 years, I cured her one day." Father said, "What have you done?" He said, "It's all because of her I could build this huge surgery." You cut off the source of the income. So you see, this, it is very important to remember these things so that we don't need to undergo the same trouble. Why samsara is such a horrible thing? What is Mahamaya? It makes us forget infinite number of troubles by giving hope, "That was a mistake. I was not very intelligent. This time I will be very intelligent." No, you can't be intelligent because the person, the being who is controlling your intelligence has not decided to give you that intelligence. Mahamaya has not approved of your plan. When she approves of your plan, okay, enough is enough. Let my child go. And now I will give liberation to him. Then all the memory will come back. "Hey, last time I got married, I suffered. I'm no more. I'm not going to get married again." This is called samsara. Interesting. So, to think of the impersonal, if we cannot think of the personal, how can we think of the impersonal? And especially if we are body identified, this is a law. Whatever we are, that is what we only look at the world, understand the world. You cannot understand the world other way than what we are. If we think we are, you know, having a form, can you think of God without having a form? So that is not possible. That is why Sri Ramakrishna chided him and said, "No, it is easy to think of God with a form rather than formless God." Because many people who claim that they love to think of the impersonal God, means formless God, a kind of haze. You know, as I close my eyes, I try to imagine God, a kind of hazy feeling. They have no correct idea about God. What do you mean by nirakara? Tell me. What do you mean by no form? Can you make your mind think of something without form? Some form will come, at least, you know, like the sky filled with light. Is it formlessness or with form? It is not formlessness. It is a very hazy thing. There is no specific form, but it is filled with light. It is full of form, all that is one kind of form. Or andhakar dekhchi. Darkness. What is your idea of darkness? Does something called darkness really exist? Is there any object called darkness? You go and catch it, I want 1 kilo of darkness. Is there any such thing? If your inability to see anything, that is called darkness. What form it has got? These are very difficult things. Muslims, you know, they claim they are nirakarins. Arya Samajis, they claim they are nirakarins. Brahma Samajis claim they are nirakarins. Look, who produced spiritual giants? How many spiritual giants Muslims have produced? How many Brahma Samajis have become God-realized souls? How many Arya Samajis had become God-realized souls? Practically, we don't get anybody. Only Sufism has produced lots of saints. But Orthodox Muslims, there must be some, but very few. So the idea is, so long as we think we have a form, we can only see through that form, idea of form. Suppose your room has a window. The window is full of yellow color. Whatever you see outside, how does it appear? So if you have never been outside your room, habituated to see outside only through that yellow colored glass, and if you are asked to think of a red colored outside, will you succeed? So that red color also will be yellow color only. You may say, I am seeing red, I am imagining red color. That red color will be nothing but yellow color only in your mind, because you don't know anything else. This is why this is what Thakur exactly is telling. To worship the impersonal is very difficult. So better we follow our nature and think of God in a personal way. This is what he is telling. Those very difficult, greater is their trouble whose minds are set on the unmanifested, for the goal of the unmanifested is very hard for the embodied to reach. Then what should, so having said this, what is the opinion of the Lord? What was the answer he gave to Arjuna's question? The first answer he said was that both are great in their own path. The second, both must be very sincerely devoted, their mind should be fixed on me in either way, and they should strive to the best of their ability to reach me, then they will reach me. Then the third statement he gave is, for most of the people, he didn't say for everybody it is difficult, for most of the people, the trouble to think of the impersonal, unmanifested Brahman is very troublesome, very difficult. Now, why do you want to take a difficult path when there is an easy path? Only a fool should do that. Then he is telling, what is the best way to reach, what is the problem, real problem? When a person says, which is superior, you want to buy something, I say an MP3 player, you ask somebody who knows, which is the best MP3 player? And then you are giving descriptions. The person who asked you the question is not interested in the descriptions themselves. They are only as a guideline so that he can buy the MP3 player. So what was the question behind this, Arjuna? What was the intention? His intention is, I want to realize you. So how can I realize you? That is what the Lord is telling. Etu sarvani karmani mayi sanyasya matparaha ananye naiva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate teshamaham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha maya veshita cetasam. So he is coming to practical application, sadhana. What is he telling? But those who worship me, resigning all actions in me, regarding me as the supreme goal, meditating on me with single-minded yoga, to these whose mind is set on me, verily I become ere long, O son of Partha, the savior out of the ocean of the mortal samsara. The essence of what he is telling is, if somebody's goal is me, and he is striving his level best to reach me, I myself will bring him to me. Thakur said, you know, somebody's mind is set on visiting Jagannath temple, but he is going in the wrong way, not intentionally, but because he was not knowing what is the right way. Then he said, somebody on the way will tell, my good man, you are going in the wrong direction, so please go, in this is the right way. Who is that person who is telling him? God himself, you know, a guru. Anybody who gives you right directions is called a guru. Guru means what? Margadarshaka. He shows you the right way. Unless you happen to be in old time Japanese, Japan. Peculiar habits of people, you know, in those days. A tourist goes to, say, Tokyo. So he wants to visit the museum. But he was going in the opposite direction. So he stops a Japanese gentleman and says, and he will bow down to you, you will bow down to him. Good exercise, you know. Very good exercise. They don't just bow down like that. 100 times if they do, what should be the digestive power of those people? So he says, sir, I'm a newcomer to this place, and I want to visit the museum. So can you guide me? He says, like this, go. So this fellow goes, starts going in the wrong direction. Yes, because the Japanese consider it impolite to tell you the right way. Very beautifully, I only saw that book somewhere here in America last time, I think 2 years back when I came. Somebody gathered all these facts. Now things have changed. So one man, he wanted to go from one city to another city. Remember? He phoned to the travel agent. So I want to book a ticket from this city to other city, I want to fly. So he says, so you want to go to that place? Yes, sir. So you want to go by the plane? Yes, sir. So you want to go on this date? Yes, sir. You want to go at this time? Yes, sir. So you want to go to that city? Going on repeating the same questions again, he thinks it is impolite to say, there is no place for these two cities. They think it is highly impolite to deny you, to contradict you. Ultimately, you have to realize that plane service doesn't exist. For, you know, Americans are just the opposite. They want to get down to the point as fast as possible. You know, now things have changed. Chinese, you want to do some business with Chinese, talk with something. 1.5 hours goes, how is your uncle, how is his grandfather? Only then they consider it right to come down to the point. Have you heard about it?
No.
Between Chinese.
Oh,
yeah. And then their word is their, honor. Most of them, it seems, never used to take any kind. If a person says, yes, I agree to this contract, condition, then it is honor bound. If he breaks that honor, the other fellow will kill him. He will bow down and kill. No, do salute, because honor bound, you know, to bow down, but he will kill. You know, it's peculiar customs of peculiar people, you know. If you go to, I think, was it Chinese? That if you, somebody invites you for food, then whether you like it or not, you will have to ask 2-3 times, ah, that food, wonderful. Then at the end, like that, you have to, you know, what is it called?
Belching.
Belching. Oh, if you, the hostess doesn't hear your belching, she will feel highly offended. So you have to struggle a hard lot to produce that belching. But at that time, you know, unfortunately, you know, they did not know that here is a knowledgeable person who could help them out of this situation. You know this, and then Arabs have their own peculiar custom. Even if the worst enemy comes to their camp, they are honor bound to produce, to give him the best food. They can't touch a hair of that person until he leaves the camp. That is why the best strategy, you know, suppose you are waiting for your troops to come, you are in the meanwhile lost. Just enter into their tent. And they are honor bound to treat you like a guest. But if you are fortunate and your troops are there, just make a dash. But because they are also waiting, when this fellow will be out of the tent, we will kill him. Yeah, these are all, in our Mahabharata, there was this kind of custom. As soon as the sun sets, and then these both fellows will go to that, oh uncle, how was the fight today? You know this.
There is that
tradition is there. As soon as sunrise, fight starts. And sunset is finished. And anybody can go anywhere. Even if you are longing to kill him, you cannot. You will be called the worst coward in the world. And there. Yes, because he, there was that Jayadratha or somebody, I forget his name, he prevented Arjuna coming to the rescue of Abhimanyu, because he gets a boon from Lord Shiva, he does tapasya, and then Lord Shiva says, Arjuna is unstoppable, but because you did tapasya, one day you will be able to stop him. And that day happened to be this, when they decided to kill Abhimanyu. And Arjuna could never overcome this fellow. But Arjuna took a vow, that before the sun sets, I will kill him. So meanwhile, the sun is about setting. Then Arjuna was sure to commit suicide. Then Krishna, he sent his Sudarshan Chakra to make appear as though the sun had really set. As soon as the sun, he thought, the other fellow thought the sun had set, he knew that Arjuna would commit, have to follow his word. Immediately he came out laughing, because you couldn't do anything. As soon as he came out laughing, the Sudarshan Chakra lifted itself. There was just the sun was about to enter set. Within that time, and Arjuna had finished this one. Beautiful, these things are, there was also a rule that a foot soldier can only fight with another foot soldier. A man on the horse cannot kill a foot soldier. A man on the elephant cannot kill a horse rider. Like that, there, you know, the word equal power.
Yeah.
They have divided people. This person only kill that person, not somebody who is below his capacity. They broke the rule. That's a different matter.
Yeah.
But they did break the rule, but that was the rule. Otherwise, they will be called cowards. And nobody wants to hear the word cowards. You know, that was the another thing, you know, honor bound. Yeah. So, they think peculiar customs, every culture has its own peculiar customs. Anyway.
But for everybody, that
They used to do, most of them. But there are also, you know, human nature. There are some people who break also. And so they get, our belief is, if they do such a thing, the karma phala will follow them. That's why when Karna, you know, his story is wonderful. While fighting, his Ratha Chakra has got stuck. Then Krishna told Arjuna, finish off this fellow. Otherwise, you are never going to finish him. Arjuna was aware, he can't do that. Then Krishna tells him, you see, he broke the rules. So you are not honor bound to keep the rules. For such a person, he will again break, because many times he broke. There were things which they should not do, but Karna did that. This one of the things is, when Abhimanyu is alone, the rule was, only one person equivalent to Abhimanyu could fight him. But all you fellows surrounded him and then killed him. So Karna started, he said, oh, this is not fair. This is not fair. That is, then Krishna also says, was it fair when you killed, when you, all of you joined together, ganged together and killed Abhimanyu? Was it fair that you wanted to disrobe Draupadi in the full Sabha? Will you do it to your wife or to your mother? So, where was your code of conduct at that time? Now you are telling, you know, Chippevi Srirangani-tulu Cherevi Gadurevi Dhammari Gudisel. High sounding words, you know, you can tell to anybody. There was a man, Harikatha man. You know, those who tell Harikathas, whole night they will sing and explain, entertain. Oh, he was very fond of onion. So one day he was extolling the bad qualities of onion. Anybody who eats onion is the worst kind of person in the whole world. His wife, unfortunately, was one of the audience. And she heard and said, what a great sin I am committing. Every day I am cooking, putting in sambar all the onions. So after the katha was over, he went. And that day sambar was very tasteless because there was no onion. Because what happened to onion? He said, you know, after yesterday night I heard your harikatha. And now I realize what a bad thing harikatha. He said, if I see you any time in my harikatha, I will. I will break your neck. Anyway, the Lord is telling, if someone sincerely follows my way, then I myself will help him. This is the truth. If we are sincerely pursuing any path, any field of life, not only spiritual field, that's why we worship Mother Saraswati. Aksharabhyasa starts with worshipping Mother Saraswati. And any knowledge is sacred. Knowledge is God. Knowledge is sacred. Anything that contains knowledge is sacred. That is why if you learn something even from a chandala, what we used to call, or a child, so if you don't know something, then that person is guru. Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. He is the teacher. Yeah.
Yes.
So we have to, so teacher means the Lord from within the child or from within this another person, whoever helps us in some way, we should be grateful to that person. So we are grateful to the, ultimately to the Divine Lord. The point is, he who plants the desire to realize him within us, he who brings the appropriate teacher so that we can pursue the path of sadhana, he is the one who sustains us so that we don't give up this effort, struggle. Again, at the end, he who reveals himself is himself. So that's why he says, those who worship me, resigning all actions in me. Resigning means what? that I do every action only to please you. It is only for pleasing you. Regarding me, the supreme goal. So, God alone should be the supreme goal. Meditating on me with single-minded yoga. To these whose mind is set on me, err along means very quickly. When a person has goal is God, his mind is fixed on God, he doesn't know anything excepting God. Everything he does is only for pleasing the Lord. What else do you think the Lord will do? Very soon, says, Teshamaham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat. I become the savior out of the ocean of the mortal samsara. This beautiful teaching has been put by Thakur in a most beautiful way. If any man takes one step towards me, I will come forward 100 steps. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanura Martanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum.